sometimes they're spot on, like to the point where it's almost the same parable. More often, they're just working with the same symbols. It's very common. A very common form is, we say, we have all these parables of kings. The kings. There was a king who had a son. Who, you know, typical setup for a parable. Yeshua uses it a lot as well. There was a king who had ruled over a certain people. This is a good way to illustrate God's relationship with some, with Israel or with the earth. A parable always begins formally, or should begin, but mostly it's assumed by an ellipsis, should begin, to what can this be compared? This can be compared to, and now you're into the parable. Right? That's how you know it's a parable. Ordinarily, you won't get that long intro, though. It'll just be, it can be compared to, or in rabbinic literature, sometimes it'll just say, a mashal, and then it'll start. So then you know in your head, oh, we're making a comparison. Parable means comparison. So the Midrash is a source of parables. What is the sources? What sort of sources? Where do we find Midrash today? We don't have the sages around anymore to give us oral tradition. Well, we find it in the New Testament. I was pointing out to you, the New Testament is full of Midrash. Almost everything the apostles say is a Midrash of their own concoction. Because you know, that's what it is. That's how they write. That's how they think. But outside of the New Testament, we find it in the Talmud. A lot of Midrash in the Talmud. We find it in the Targums. Those are the Aramaic paraphrases of the Bible. But mostly we find it in collections and anthologies of Midrash. That's where you would expect to find it. So, I'm going to run through some of these names. And then when you hear the names in the future, you might be able to associate them. Like say, oh, I kind of know what that is. I've written these down. These are just a few of the collections, but these are the big ones and the ones you commonly hear referenced. And I've written these in the order of their composition. None of these are older, or according to scholars, who I think are generally wrong on this, they would say the earliest of these is in the 3rd or 4th century, and the latest is in the probably the 12th century. So, you know, when we get into the later collections, we're talking about material that is as much as 1,100 years, more than 1,000 years after the days of the apostles. I find that to be absolutely fascinating because I can still go into material that's more than 1,000 years later than the days of the apostles and find direct parallels. Like, for example, one of the latest ones, Yalkut Shimoni, preserves for us the Midrash about Hashem was looking for some place to build his world, but as he looked through the generations ahead, he saw that those wicked people would only irritate him. So then finally, as he's flipping through the generations ahead, he saw Abraham. He said, upon this rock I can establish my world. To what can this be compared? A king was looking for a place to build his palace. Everywhere he dug, he found only swampy marshland. Finally, he struck bedrock, and he said, upon this bedrock I will build my palace. Right. So, this is the background. I mean, there's no question. This is a direct source behind Matthew 16, when the master says to Peter, upon you are Petros, you are bedrock, and upon this rock I will build my assembly. We would miss that this is a Yeshua is alluding to a midrash about Abraham as he designates Peter. It's fabulous stuff. And I got it from the 12th century. You know, what's the other possible explanation? That Jewish people are reading the New Testament and making up background material? You know, say, you know, how could we make a fake background for that? You know, it's like, it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. What's happened here? Well, the guy in the 12th century copied it from a collection that was 2 centuries old. That particular collection had copied it from an older one that was a century earlier. They had copied it from a manuscript they found that was 3 centuries old, and so on, until we get back to an oral tradition stage, where the first guy who wrote it down heard it from his teacher, who heard it from his teacher, and this is the chain of transmission. And I can demonstrate this. We could do this all night. I could show you these things. I just flip you through the New Testament. This is what I do for a living. I'm serious. This is my job. All right. So, my point is that even though these collections that I'm going to give you right now, most of them are early medieval, were written in the early Middle Ages, that means that the manuscripts we have go back to, or not the manuscripts we have, but the collections we have, the last editor to put his hands to editing them was in the early Middle Ages. It does not mean that those materials originated or were written, created in the Middle Ages. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. Mekilta de Rabbi Ishmael is, we already mentioned, that was the one we quoted about the rock. That's Halakhic Midrash, commentary on Exodus. Sifra is on Leviticus. Sifrei, not to be confused with Sifrei. That's Numbers and Deuteronomy. These are the earliest ones we have, those three. The big one is Midrash Rabbah. Now I've got, we've got Midrash Rabbah on the third shelf up there. Got Midrash Rabbah out here. Midrash Rabbah is written over several centuries or compiled over several different centuries by different editors. It contains material that appears also in the Jerusalem Talmud and here and there pieces. But Midrash Rabbah means big Midrash. And it was designed to be like a Reader's Digest collection of great Midrash. And so if you ever hear reference to Genesis Rabbah, Exodus Rabbah, Leviticus Rabbah, Numbers Rabbah, Deuteronomy Rabbah, Esther Rabbah, Ruth Rabbah, Ecclesiastes Rabbah, Lamentations Rabbah, what am I missing? Esther Rabbah, Song of Songs Rabbah. Those are all part of this big collection, the Midrash Rabbah. So we're going to look at some Midrash Rabbah tonight. Midrash Rabbah is the standard. I mean, people can study whatever Midrash they want, but Midrash Rabbah is the standard that is studied in Judaism today. Pasikta de Rav Kahana. Pasikta means the verses of. The verses of Rav Kahana. I have a colleague who enjoys this. You all met, some of you did, anyway. Rabbi Carl Kinbar, he's been working with Pasikta. I'm not sure if he's been working with Rabati or Kahana, it doesn't matter. It's tied to the calendar. It's Midrash that's tied to the calendar. Midrash Tanhuma is just Midrash on the Torah. We have that collection over there. Looks like this. It's good stuff. Look, this one is nice. It has the Hebrew in it. Yeah. Avot de Rabbi Natan, we don't have. I wish we did. That is a Midrash. Check it out on Pirkei Avot. It's good stuff. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, we do have. Allegedly, that goes back to Rabbi Eliezer in the first century. But scholars say it's, a medieval work. It certainly is. Pasikta Rabati, it's just a different form of the other Pasikta. Yalkut Shimoni is maybe the most expansive, is the biggest, I think, because it takes Midrash from all these older collections and puts them in order and offers them like a big commentary on the whole Bible, on the whole Old Testament. And then Midrash HaGadol is also a greatest hits. That's like a top 40 album, I guess, from earlier material. Just means big Midrash. All right, so that's the Midrash, and this is great. I mean, this literature it's fabulous. Why is it so important to study Midrash? Well, it's not so important for believers to study Midrash directly from the sources, but I think if you don't know the Midrash, you don't understand the New Testament. That's I would say without any reservation that if you don't understand, I'm not saying that you don't get it, you can't understand anything from the New Testament, but if you don't understand why and how the scriptures are being used in the New Testament, like for example, how that text can prove anything. Out of Egypt I called my son. Like that one. When Matthew says that this text from Hosea, out of Egypt I called my son, applies to the master. You go and you look at it in Hosea, it clearly doesn't. Instead, it's speaking about the Exodus from Egypt. You know, it's like, what's going on here? Right? Well, if you're familiar with the Midrash and the way that the sages use Midrash, you won't be uncomfortable with that at all. You'd be like, well, that's cool. You know, I see now, you know, because you can make the connections. You can see why. And in fact, I could show you a Midrash that uses the same text and applies it to the Messiah. So, there you go. And, yeah. All right, let's learn a little bit of Midrash. We'll just take a fun run at it, okay?